Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
The HIV epidemic is not over. HIV is still here.
The face of HIV is so diverse.
The biggest thing to reduce HIV stigma is just to talk about it. Testing and PrEP and HIV treatment and how effective it is today.
Undetectable equals untransmittable. Whether you're positive or negative, there's not a wrong door. Whether it's testing or whether it's treatment, do it for you, Montgomery County.
Learn more about HIV testing, treatment, and prevention at doitforyoumc.org.
Yo, what's good? What's happening, Rush Nation? Welcome to episode 72 of 5 Yard College. Once again, I'm joined by my indefatigable wingman, Ash Goddard. Welcome to the New Look College Show. It's a Wednesday. We appreciate that you thought you were getting it late. This is how we're going to look for the rest of the season, Ash. You and I had a chat. I say you and I. You said to me, Stocks, this isn't the best way we can put our product out. Wednesday should be the day because we're going to be behind on the playoff rankings. Basically going to be dead news. Let's get ahead of this. Let's get ahead of the curve. Welcome to Wednesday's Rush Nation. Ash, how are you doing on this fine Wednesday evening?
Yeah, I'm doing great. And yeah, we thought with the college playoff rankings now being the main focus of attention, and they're not coming out until late Tuesday UK time. You're right. We're a week behind in terms of the rankings, the real thing that matters now for the college game. Like, yes, we don't get the instant reaction from the games that we did on a Monday, but I think this is more beneficial for the long run because we're getting into the bread and butter of the season now. We're still going to be focusing in on those league, on those conference games that will decide the title games, but the main focus now has got to be on the playoffs and the playoff rankings in particular, and they are starting to take shape. So Wednesday's got to be the day, and we get more news and we get more up-to-date news rather than covering stuff from last week that we might have missed by a day or two. We're now well up to date with everything that's been going on.
Bang on trend, just like your polo shirt, Chris. And not only that, if you're watching on the video, my wife got me this Chicago Bears Crucial Catch hat. Yes, it's the Bears, but the hat's dope, so don't care. Thank you, Mrs. Mitchell. It was much appreciated on our anniversary. So, Ash, with it being a Wednesday now, like you said, we're going to have more news. We're going to be more up to date. We're going to be on the ball.
Yeah.
The program is going to look slightly different. Obviously, we haven't got the results to run through or anything like that. We are going to pick some games out of the upcoming week that you think we think you, as a listener, obviously will be locked in because that's what we do. But as a listener, we think they're the games that perhaps are highest on our radar. Is that right?
I would say they're a couple of them are crucial because of the standings and the fact that they're in conference, and a couple of them are just entertaining and will have a factor on the rankings. So they're important games that people should pay attention to, and I think they will also be entertaining games with the teams that are involved.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, Rush Nation, if you think we, by moving from a Monday to a Wednesday, are missing something, or there's something you want added to the show, then by all means, reach out at 5 Yard College, let us know, and we can tweak the show to what you guys want to hear. Because obviously, we're just chatting college ball, Ash and I, a couple of chums talking about football. But for some reason, people are listening. And if you're not listening to the stuff you want to hear, then hit us up and we can tweak the doc, make changes to see fit and go forward that way. Because, you know, people listen, we want to make them happy, we want to cover everything. Let's get into the news, let's get into what we've managed to accumulate since Saturday, Ash, and we'll start at Texas A&M. They have landed the number one recruit of the 2022 defensive tackle class, and that is Walton Nolan. The five-star recruit selected the Aggies over Florida, Alabama, Michigan, and many other programs, as you can imagine, being the number one DT. Nolan said his decision came down to the production of its defensive line. A&M have got one of the best defenses this year, and every year you think about defense, you think about Texas A&M. Not a terrible choice for the Walter Nolan.
No, not at all. And as you say, he is now the number one in this draft class. Obviously, with Quinn Ewers declaring early and going into Ohio State year early, that made Walter Nolan the de facto number one in this 2022 class. And he is a big talent. And I'm not just saying big in his potential, but this lad is a big lad. 6'4", I think he's already topping 320. I think he's pushing towards 330 pounds. Absolute animal in the defensive line. And as you say, Aggies have already got one of the best defenses and one of the best defensive lines in the country. And they're just going to be adding to that for 22. This lad should be lights out from day one. I think he could be a day one starter.
That's a scary prospect for anyone facing A&M going forward for the next few years. Right, let's move on. We've talked about Conference USA a lot. There is more news out of Conference USA, and it's good news. With the announcement that it will be adding Liberty, Jacksonville State, New Mexico State, and Sam Houston State. Sam Houston State, Ash, never heard of them. Pray tell.
They are currently an FCS program, so the division, as you would call it, below FBS, and they're one of the top teams in that. It's been them, South Dakota State, and North Dakota State for the last few years. It's to be honest, it's been coming that they were going to take the step up into the FBS. They've been one of, if not the best program in the FCS, and this is a good transition for them. But when they get in there in 2023, and I think I haven't paid a great deal of attention to the FCS this year, to be honest with you. I don't think many people have with a certain quarterback no longer in North Dakota State, Trey Lance, that is.
It's not Voldemort. You can mention that.
but it's not had as much attention because there's not that lights out player that has been shooting up draft boards. So it's not had as much attention. But Sam Houston have regularly, for at least the last few years, been one of the top teams in the FCS, and this is their reward. They're taking a step up to the Division One, and to be honest, they could well be a competitive team within the Conference USA from day dot. And of course, we know about Liberty. Again, they're getting a lot of attention this year because of Malik Willis, but they're a well-run program. They've got some good victories this year, and Jacksonville and New Mexico State have both taken the step towards them as well. I think New Mexico are independent, and I believe Jacksonville State were FCS as well. I may be incorrect in that. Jacksonville State's one of the ones that I haven't got a great deal of information about, but I have a feeling they are also an FCS program.
And they shot to the forefront early this year when they beat FSU, didn't they? They beat Florida State in that upset. So people got Jacksonville State on their radar names-wise, and perhaps that added to their being added to Conference USA. A big win like that can only have helped. Let's move on to some great news for Arizona. They ended the nation's longest losing streak of 20 games following the 10-3 victory over Cal Bears. Cal were severely impacted by COVID this week. However, that is to take nothing away from Arizona. They were the better team throughout the game. You can only play what's put in front of you. And not only did Arizona end the nation's losing streak, UNLV also ended their losing streak. So there is currently no teams that have not won a game in football this season. And for a brief period, UNLV had the record until they then won after Arizona. So yeah. I don't know what the current record is, Ash. I don't suppose you've got that information.
No, I haven't, to be honest with you. I'm really unprepared. It was UNLV until I realised that they also won. So, yeah, drastically unprepared. But, I mean, it can't be anywhere near close to 20 games if everybody has won a game this year. So, excuse me. But, yeah, it's there's someone out there, but I couldn't tell you off the top of my head who it was.
Well, it can only be 8 or 9
it's
now, right?
It's got to be 8 or 9, yeah. You've just got to be one of those 1-9 teams that might have won in the first week can't be a long stretch. It's not the 20 games of Arizona or the 19 or 18 games, whatever it was, of Vegas. So it's a fresh start for most this year.
Absolutely.
It's strange to see that we're going to finish a year with without a winless team. It's not often that a team that we don't have one program in college football that doesn't go zero. So
is that right? If I had to guess, yeah. I would have said it was the other way. I would have said because of the amount of teams and the schedules, there would have always been more seasons where there are teams without a zero record as opposed to more seasons with a team with zero record.
I don't know, maybe. I mean, it's at least in recent memory, there's always been a handful of teams that have had a zero on their record, and this is one of the rare years where there won't be a winless team to end the season.
Well,
there'll be a lot of one win teams. Let's be honest, but
that's irrelevant. No, exactly. If it's not zero, it's a win. Rush Nation, if you know or you would like to find out, you know, let us know at 5 Yard College again. We're here for that sort of information. Ash and I jumped on thinking we're going to keep this show within an hour. It's going to be prompt, professional, efficient. And here we are talking about zero win teams.
Yeah.
Who knows how long this one's going to go, Rush Nation. Right, over to Texas. And the Longhorns have released the statement that wide receiver Joshua Moore is no longer with the program and will enter the transfer portal. Moore and Steve Sarkisian got into a heated debate in training, which was initially dismissed by Sarkisian. However, that's turned around, flipped, and Joshua Moore is no longer a Longhorn.
Yeah, a bit of a quick transition, this one. It was, as I say, Sarkisian and the Texas came out and said, no, it was a bust up in training. These things happen. We're going to move on. And a few days later, that's it. Moore is gone and he's entering the transfer portal. By the way they've announced it, that he is no longer with the program, it sounds as if it's come from them. And obviously now he's entered the transfer portal rather than being dismissed outright, rather than it being Moore has decided he's entering the transfer portal, so he won't be playing for us for anymore. It's he is not with us anymore, and he is also in the transfer portal. So it sounds like they've had enough of him and have cut bait.
Yeah, absolutely. We've got a new segment now, Ash.
Yeah.
We've had Injury Corner, we've had News Corner, we've got Recruitment Corner. And with all the goings on with the coaches, we've got Coaches Corner. It's that bit in the parking lot at the back of the services you pull into with all the school coaches lined up and the skids are in, causing carnage at the Burger King. We're into the Coaches Corner. Florida, obviously top of this list after the weekend's loss. The Gators have fired defensive coordinator Todd Grantham and offensive line coach John Hevesy after a blowout loss to South Carolina. This move comes less than a month after Dan Mullen said he was against firing coaches during the season following the LSU loss. But this Dan Mullen seat is getting hotter and hotter, and it feels like he's shedding coaches in order to try and save his job. It would be very, you know, Dan Mullen is a good coach. He's a great recruiter, but he seems to be losing grip on the tenureship at Florida. And is he trying to deflect the attention by firing coordinators?
Yeah, it does seem like that, doesn't it? I think Murph raised it in our chat that we have as the 5 Yard group. He mentioned this news a couple of hours after I had it on the show doc on Monday. And yeah, his Dan Mullen's seat is as hot as it gets at the minute. Just with the Gators being such a high profile team and the spotlight's on them regardless of their current run, and it's just not been going good for them this year. And yeah, he's unfortunately walking a fine line, and as you say, trying to deflect with these firings and maybe give himself a little bit more leeway.
Yeah, it would be an un-Florida thing, I feel, to do to get rid of Dan Mullen in season. Although Florida aren't necessarily, from what I've heard, the sort of team to just wield an axe unnecessarily. They build a case and it would be an end of season job. If Dan Mullen keeps losing, it's only a matter of time. I can't see anything else before that occurring. It feels like an end of season move for me, this, rather than...
Yeah, I think we're that close to the end of the year now. I would be surprised if he's gone within the next three games. I suspect it is, if they decide to cut bait, it's going to be at the end of the year.
Yeah. Somebody who didn't decide to cut bait is UMass. They have fired head coach Walt Bell and defensive coordinator Tommy Restivo. They went on Sunday. Bell had a 2-23 record over his 2+ seasons with UMass, and the program is ranked as one of the worst in the country. So, I mean, I don't know why they did it now, perhaps to get ahead of the coaching search. Who knows?
Yeah, maybe. There's been a few firings in the last few months and weeks, and they're maybe trying to take advantage of that and picking up someone that they like the look of. But, I mean, there's not much to see here. UMass lose, and that's it, really.
Another team that perhaps lost and got rid of their head coach is Akron. They fired head coach Tom Arth following a loss to Ball State on Tuesday night. It sees them sitting 2-7 on this season. Now, Arth was 3-24 in his 3 seasons with Akron, so slightly better than Bell had at UMass. One more win, but it wasn't enough to convince the Akron athletic department that he should keep his job. So he's also been given the chop there. Anything here, Ash, or is it just the nothing to see?
No,
again,
nothing to see. Move on. Yeah. Unfortunately, it's not. That is the news, and we'll see who gets the daunting task of taking on those two programs next.
Are these the sort of programs where young coaches or coaches who are moving on from coordinator to head coach sort of cut their teeth, as it were, as a head coach?
Yeah, I would say so. I think both Walt Bell and Tom Arth, I know Walt Bell was, but I think they're both relatively young coaches that were starting out. Arth is in his 40s, I believe, and this is his second or third coaching job, but it's his first like step up. This is his first FBS one, so it's like a step in. So before that, I think he was FCS in his hometown college that he went to. So yeah, you cut your teeth there, and if it goes well, brilliant. That's a great thing to have on your resume, but more often than not, this sort of thing happens. 2-20, 5-15, those sort of records, and they then go back, maybe get another offensive or defensive coordinator job and try again in a few years.
Well, best of luck to both gentlemen. Georgia Southern have announced former USC coach Clay Helton as their new head coach with immediate effect. Helton was out of work for less than 2 months. I've not heard anything about this. Ash, fill me in.
Big pickup for Georgia Southern. USC obviously got rid of Helton after the start to their year that they weren't happy with, and last year wasn't great for them. But he's a great coach, a great college football coach. Mm. He's proved it in the past, and massive pickup for Georgia Southern. And this, he's been a good recruiter in his time. That's one of the things that he's done, that he did well at USC. So that. It's a big scoop for Georgia Southern, and hopefully we'll see them competitive in the next few years if he can get it right there, which I can imagine he will. It's a step down, but the Sun Belt is still a group of five conference, and Georgia Southern up to a point are competitive in that conference. They're not having the best year; they're 4-5. But yeah, great pickup for Georgia Southern and a restart for Clay Helton.
Yeah, and it's a good time for him to get in, realize what he's got before the reset heading into next season. It gives him that little bit of extra time to work out what he's playing with and what's happening at Georgia Southern. So a good move for Clay Helton, and as you say, a great move for Georgia Southern, because he was a good head coach at USC. They just weren't pleased with how that was turning out. Nebraska have announced that head coach Scott Frost is going to remain in charge through the 2022 season. They've announced that he'd signed a restructured contract. Scott Frost was one of the guys who I thought perhaps might have been on the hot seat with Nebraska.
He was, yeah. Yeah, so, he really was. He was one of the ones to go. People were expecting him to be gone with the way that Nebraska have been this year. But he's taken a pay cut. He's taken a pay cut by around about $1 million, I believe. And they've also restructured and cut his buyout, so if he does get fired, he gets less money. I believe that's by half as well if he goes in 22. So it's working well for Nebraska if they do want to get rid, but obviously it gives Frost a bit of extra time. And it's a real shame because Frost came in to Nebraska as one of the top young coaches out there, one of the ones that everyone was looking at. He left USC and he was looking, I think, before he took Nebraska and before Mullen went to Florida, I believe Frost was in contention for the Florida job. So, and it's not been the best 4 years. He's got a 15-27 record or 29 record, something along those sort of lines. It's not been the best for him. He's not had a winning year, but he's been given an extra year. But the caveat is that Nebraska can now get rid of him for a lot cheaper. So it works out well for Nebraska, but it gives Frost another year to try and prove himself.
Yeah, that's very, very uncoach friendly, that sort of deal.
Yes, definitely.
Scott Frost obviously has, well, he feels that he must have work left to do at Nebraska, because surely taking a pay cut and basically being in the noose or under the guillotine for a less pricey chop, shall we say, that must be some pressure cooker situation for Frost, because now he knows that he has to perform or he's gone for less money.
Yeah, exactly.
So we'll see how Nebraska get on there. And then finally, Texas Tech have announced former Baylor assistant Joey McGuire as the new head coach. He'll take over with immediate effect, just like Georgia Southern and Clay Helton. McGuire spent 5 years with Baylor before taking the step up to head coach at Texas Tech. This is, on the scale of hires, is this for Texas Tech? Because obviously they were linked with the TCU and all those sort of jobs because of trying to get all the Texas recruited and stuff. This wasn't necessarily somebody who was perhaps linked with Texas Tech early on.
It's a great hire for them. I think I can't say his name.
Joey McGuire.
McGuire, that's it, yeah.
I got you.
Yeah, thank you. His height, when he was in charge of one of the Texas State high school teams, and I think he led them to a great record and multiple championships. He was obviously under Matt Rhule at Baylor before Rhule went to the Panthers in the NFL, and he was also one of the favorites to take over from Matt Rhule when he left the Panthers. So he is a big name. It's a great pickup for Baylor and Sorry, it's a great pickup for Texas Tech, and it's a big loss for Baylor, because I can imagine I can't imagine they had a great deal of say in keeping him or not, but I can imagine they would have wanted to, because the job he did for the program for, I think, the 5 years that he was there has been fantastic with the coaches around him. And I'm excited to see what he can do with this Texas Tech team, because for a long time now they've been below par as to what we expect from them, and it's a good challenge for him to take on this head coaching role, and it's a good challenge for Texas Tech as a whole.
Yeah, it feels, from what I've seen of Baylor this year, they've been pretty good. Obviously, we know that with their record. And if he can implement some of what I've seen from Baylor this year at Texas Tech, I think Texas Tech could be a massive improvement next year. So I think, like you mentioned it all, you hit it on the nail on the head. Great move for them. Be interesting to see how that plays out. Right, Ash, with us moving to Wednesday, we never actually covered last week's playoff rankings. No. There was a bit of a void. We were going to do an emergency pod. The rankings came out, apart from perhaps Bama being a little bit too high, Cincinnati being slightly disrespected. There wasn't enough for us to jump on and think we could fill a pod. Then we changed the date to Wednesday. So we've got 2 weeks sort of to work on. Week one is completely irrelevant now because of the games that have been played. We're going to dive straight into week two. I've noticed on the notes you've got quite a lot of writing here, and I didn't do it.
No.
Feel free to take it away and explain what this is.
Well, yeah, I just thought it might be beneficial for those who are not as in the know with the playoff rankings. And obviously we've been speaking about the AP rankings all season. That's the Associated Press rankings. So that is the media that decide these rankings that people look at throughout the year. You've also got the coaches rankings, which are done each week alongside that, which we don't pay as much attention to, because obviously the media ones are the bread and butter. They're the ones that everybody pays attention to until the playoff rankings roll about, which is from the first weekend of November. And they are all that really matters when it comes to college football.
Yep.
They are the ones that determine the top four playoff teams. So the four teams that are going to compete for the championship each year, and also the New Year's Six, fifth and sixth in there that compete for the next honours outside of the top four. So along with, obviously, the College Football Playoff Committee, which is a group of coaches, ex-commissioners, ex-players. There's a whole range of people, of higher-ups within the college football game, that decide on these rankings each week. They rank their own top 25 outside of the AP and outside of the coaching. And as I say, they determine the playoffs and they determine the New Year's Six. Along with that, they also are in charge of pretty much all of the bowl games. So the way the New Year's bowl games works are some conferences are already contracted to send their particular champions to those bowl games. For example, you've got the Big Ten and the Pac-12 compete in the Rose Bowl, the SEC and the Big 12 compete in the Sugar Bowl, and the ACC compete in the Orange Bowl alongside the highest ranked team in the SEC or the Big 10 or Notre Dame if they are the highest ranked non-playoff team. If a conference champion makes the playoffs, so for example, Bama, Ohio State, Clemson, the bowl game for the Rose, Sugar, Orange, they'll then be picked from a replacement from the conference. So usually the next team up, the team that loses in the title game, or the team that wins the title game but aren't in the playoffs. Doesn't often happen that way, but it has done in the past. Also, when one of the bowls is part of the playoffs and the conference championship team is not picked for the playoffs, the team will play in one of the other bowls. You've then also got the rankings matter. They also matter for the group of five. So the highest ranked group of five teams, so obviously that's the American, Conference USA, MAC, the Mountain West, and the Sun Belt, they'll automatically go into a New Year's Six game. So they are guaranteed a place in one of the top bowl games as one of the group of five. USC have been that team for the last 2 years. Obviously, at the moment, if they don't make it in, Cincinnati are going to be that team. So it's just to give a bit of background on how the playoffs rankings differ, but how much more important they are. They basically dictate what everybody plays for at the end of the year, not just in the top college, not just in the playoffs for the title, but obviously the top bowl games outside of that and all of the bowl games, barring obviously the conference restrictions, but they still have a say in that in terms of who goes and who doesn't.
So two things there, Ash. You said USC were the champion of the group of five. I think you meant UCF.
Sorry, but UCF, yeah.
Yeah, that's fine. People get it. People get it. And then do we think that these playoff rankings come out and then this is how it seems to me after listening to you then and you as well as Rush Nation, though I'm still fairly new to the college game. The playoff rankings come out and then we are drummed in about the top four. And the top four is what matters because they are the playoff rankings. But if they are affecting all the bowls because they're also chosen by the committee, are we sort of bypassing these? Because some of these bowl games are huge for teams if they're in the rankings and never been that high before. I feel like the bowl games are glossed over a little bit by these playoff rankings because it is all about the top four. And not necessarily, from what I've heard on podcasts and watched and read and stuff, the bowl games eligibility and stuff is, it feels as if we're missing out a little bit on the build-up and excitement to some of them for the teams that aren't necessarily there all the time.
Yeah, and to be honest, a lot of the time the New Year's Six, as they call it, are the ones that do get the attention because those bowl games are so exciting and a lot of them do most of the time have ramifications outside of that game alone for the program. But you're right. As soon as the playoff rankings, everybody pays attention when it's the AP rankings at the top four. This team is in there. This team is just missing out. And should they be in there? We do it ourselves. And then you get to November and none of it matters. Mm. The AP rankings really don't matter aside from being a potentially different looking. And most of the time they are a different looking top 25, because you look at last week's, the first playoff ranking come out and Cincinnati were fifth or sixth. I can't remember off the top of my head now.
Second
in the AP. And it's just like, how? What are you seeing that other people aren't? But they, what the college playoff rankings do a lot more than the AP rankings is they dig into the strength of schedule. They dig into the games that they've won and how they've won them. A prime example of that is Oklahoma. Oklahoma have been top four for the whole year in the AP rankings. The first college-ranked playoff rankings come out, and they're eight because their strength of schedule hasn't been great and their results against the teams that they played have not been great, and they've penalised them for that. and they penalized Cincinnati for that, and they've not penalized Alabama and obviously not Georgia and Oregon. They've rewarded them for that because of the teams they've played and the teams they've beat. So they take it into a whole nother level, and that's why these rankings are so important.
Mm. And they use. Oh, I was listening to a podcast the other day, and they were talking about some of the metrics they use are very different to how the media do it on the AP before. So it's very difficult. I don't really know how to word this because I'm very new to the whole thing, but it can appear, and rightly so, you know, because sometimes we get a little bit caught up in perhaps the love story of a Cincinnati or a Notre Dame, someone like that, or even a BYU because they're independent at the moment and they've played well. But and you can argue that BYU they've played a lot of Pac-12 schools and have got one of the best Pac-12 records outside of Oregon. So they could perhaps be higher because their competition has been tough for them as an independent. But it was the Alabama at 2 last week, and perhaps even now, that is, I find, a little bit strong. I'm not disagreeing they shouldn't be in the top 4. They're one of the best teams in football right now. Mm-hmm. But should they be ahead of a team, say, Ohio State? So I tell you what, I'll put a pin in this chat for when we get to the top 5, because otherwise we're working top to bottom, and we don't want to do a disservice to 25 upwards. So, as per usual, week in, week out, Ash, let's do 25 up. Do you want to go first or second?
Yeah, I'll go first. It's not a problem. So, 25 to 21. At 25 is Arkansas, 24 Utah, 23 UTSA, one of the 4 undefeated teams left in the country. They weren't in the college playoff rankings last week. They have been rewarded for continuing to stay undefeated and come in at number 23. San Diego State at 22 and Pitt at 21. So there's no real surprises here because, yes, some of these teams have 2 or 3 losses. UTSA are undefeated. But as we said earlier, the strength of schedule, the teams you play, a number of much more in-depth factors matter so much more in these rankings than they do in the AP rankings. So Arkansas have taken out some big teams this year, yet they sit 6-3, but they are still at 25 because of those teams that they've beaten. UTSA are only at 23 despite being 9-0 because of the conference they play in, because of the conference teams that they've played and the teams in general that they've played. So there's no real issues with this 5 in particular. I think everyone here is there on merit. Arkansas and Pitt have taken out some big teams. San Diego State are one of the top teams in the Mountain West. I think they are the top team in the Mountain West at the moment. And UTSA are undefeated. So there's no real arguments for me here in this first 5.
I think Pitt are, I'm not arguing the 21st position here. They obviously lost to Miami 2 weeks ago, and that has hugely hurt their playoff rankings, because if they'd have beaten Miami, then we would have seen them, I think, around 10 to 12, something like that, because of the teams they played and beaten, however they slid down. I think you're right, those 5 for me. It's interesting with UTSA being undefeated. And we had the national champions of... Who declared themselves national champions? UCF?
UCF did, yeah. When they went undefeated for 2 or 3 years, something like that, didn't they? They had like a 20-odd game unbeaten run, and they said they're national champions,
Which I can get on board with at that point. I mean, it's hard to actually say they are, but when you go that many games undefeated, at what point, I know I say this every week, does an undefeated record, regardless of competition, realistically, how far up can UTSA go? Say they go the whole season undefeated. Where, I don't know their strength schedule, what they've got ahead of me, because I don't have it in front of me. But how far do you think they could possibly go undefeated all the way up? Because to be at 23, and I feel like they're hard done by. And this is me being a rookie here. I just feel like an undefeated team. And there's like, when you say there's only 4 of them left, to be 23, I think a top 20 berth is a far more respectable.
I would agree. I would I would personally see them somewhere between 15 to 20. But unfortunately, the conference they play in, Conference USA, them and the Sun Belt are the two that are looked at as the... You've got the group of five, then you've got the Mountain West, then you've got the American and the Mid-Atlantic, the MAC division, and then you've got the Sun Belt and the Conference USA, and just their schedule isn't there. They played Memphis this year, who, yes, were great last year, but they've been very poor. They played Vegas, who have only just won their first game. last week's game against UTEP was a big one because I believe they were both undefeated, or they both had a good record up to that point.
Yeah, I think UTEP had one.
Sorry. They had two losses before that, but it was a big game within the team for them, the year for them. The teams they're playing aren't there. They played Illinois to start the year. That's probably the biggest team they've played this year, and that's probably it. But looking at their schedule now, it's going to be realistically the biggest team they play this year, just because they're a Power 5 team. But it's the only Power 5 team that they're going to play, and that unfortunately will always have a factor. And you also look at the likes of Cincinnati. We've spoken about them many times before. Yes, they're undefeated, but you look back at their strength of schedule, and that's why sometimes that they're unfortunately hard done by because of that. But with UTSA... Sorry, go on. I was just going to say, but with UTSA, their strength of schedule is even lower than Cincinnati, so that's why there's such a big berth between those two, despite them both still being undefeated.
Yeah, and I was just going to say the Cincinnati strength of schedule going forward, it's been made worse by SMU losing twice now, and the loss against Memphis. I think it was a field goal or a last minute, or was it a return?
No, I believe it was a field goal to win.
I think they lost 2 weeks ago on a kick return at the end of the game.
SMU.
Yeah, and then I think they lost in a field. So the two SMU losses have both come in last place, I think, if memory serves. But then that really hurts Cincinnati now because SMU have dropped out in the top 25.
Yeah.
They're a group of five school as it is, SMU. And now you think, well, Cincinnati don't have anybody difficult now. There's nobody ranked who can add to their strength of pushing into the top four. So barring many teams losing and chaos ensuing, even if Cincinnati won out in a convincing way, which... they're not doing at the moment. They're not putting a stamp of authority on games. As much as you, me, the entire college football landscape would love to see Cincy in that top four, I just can't see it this year. But again, we're bouncing back to the top five, Ash. Let's get back to the middle of the pack. We've got Iowa at 20, then Purdue at 19, Wisconsin at 18, which was a bit of a shock for me. Auburn, after their loss, are down to 17 after moving up to 13 last week, something like that. And then NC State at 16 after their good win against, oh gosh, who did NC State beat?
What, this weekend?
Yeah.
Florida State.
That's the one.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, I think I agree with you. I think Wisconsin's maybe a bit of a surprise. However, they've been very convincing over the last 3 or 4 weeks now. Obviously, they absolutely hammered Rutgers this weekend, 52-3. They beat Iowa the week before and held Iowa to one touchdown. And they beat Purdue the week before that, who have obviously been taking names. And, I mean, the start of the year for them was poor. But then you look at the teams they played at the start of the year, Penn State, Notre Dame, Michigan, obviously, they're the three losses that they've had this year. Apart from that, they've obviously picked up all the wins that you would expect them to. Yeah. So I think the teams they've beaten in the last few weeks of war of that their reward has been this ranking, and the fact that they were so highly rated to start the year as well is probably still in the back of people's minds.
Yeah, no, I agree.
I mean, to be honest, that again, I don't really have any complaints here. Iowa have dropped drastically to what we saw at the start of the year, but again, before that point, they were dominant. And they've had a few bad weeks, and this is the unfortunate thing that will happen for them now. But they still deserve to be ranked just with how well they started the year. Purdue have knocked off two massive teams, and rightly deserve to be ranked. And dreading this weekend.
I was going to say, you've got to worry about these smaller matches.
It's going to happen. It's going to happen. I know it's going to happen, and I'm dreading it. But they are more than deserving to be ranked because of that, despite having I think they're 6-3 as well. But they deserve to be there, no doubt about it.
Yeah, I was just going to bring up the fact that your boys are going to be taking on the Boilermakers this weekend after they've been taking some scalps. But is that the game that Cincinnati need? I don't know. I don't know. 15, Ash, Ole Miss.
Yes, 15. Again, I've got no real complaints. Up to a point, Ole Miss have played very well. And the games that they've dropped have been games that we would expect to be competitive, and realistically, Ole Miss would have to be at their top of the game to get over the likes of Auburn. They lost 2 weeks last week to Auburn, but then they saw off LSU. They beat Liberty this weekend. They lost to Bama. We would expect them to lose that, and I think that's it, isn't it? They've only had 2 losses this year. Yes, they lost to Auburn. They lost to Bama. And they've won the rest of their game. So I think it's warranted. And that Arkansas game at the start of October, winning by a point, 52-51 game, I'd rank them just for that. With the way that game was and how they both played, I mean, yeah, it was fantastic. And of course, this week's going to be a massive one. But we'll get onto that a bit later. So up to.
I've thrown you off. I led you in. And
Ole Miss at 15. Then BYU were at 14 again. They had a bit of a slip up mid season, but they've rebounded, and this is a warranted place for them. Baylor at 13, possibly a bit hard done by, but again, this weekend could be a massive one for them, and we could see them shoot up. Wake Forest made the top 10 in the AP rankings for the first time last week, and they were ranked 10th in the... Were they ranked 10th in the week one college? They've dropped down to 12 because of the loss to UNC, and rightly so. I think, again, the year they've had to this point, I'm glad they haven't plummeted, because that they don't deserve to drop massive amounts, but they deserve to drop out of the top 10 after that loss. At 11, Texas A&M, again, another team that have had a strong year with a couple of up-and-down weeks, but again, games that you would have thought could have gone either way. That game this weekend, Texas A&M versus Ole Miss, is going to be massive. I'm really looking forward to that. And then, yeah, that's 15-11. I think, again, there's no real complaints here. I think everybody that is in this bracket, their places are warranted.
Mm-hmm.
Each of these teams have had slip-ups in the year, but have rebounded, obviously, bar Wake Forest. They have had no slip-ups up until this weekend, and now it's time to see how they rebound with the games they've got left. We keep drumming in about Wake Forest's schedule for the rest of the year. UNC was one of those teams that we were thinking that they're going to see over, and then it gets difficult, whereas now I can still... Clemson this weekend. Is it this weekend? No, NC State this weekend. Massive game. And then Clemson, and then Boston College to end it. We could see, as we said before, we could see a one loss. We could see Wake Forest with one loss on the end of the year, or we could see Wake Forest losing two of these last three games. It's up in the air with them now.
I think the
UNC loss is one that they're really going to be kicking themselves with.
Don't start me on the UNC loss, Ash. It's absolutely dagger to the heart. That fourth quarter absolutely murdered me this weekend. I think you're right. I want to do a stat correction. I said three of the Wake Forest games were at home. They're away. I got that wrong. They had one home game and not one away game. So would that have changed my opinion? I don't think so. And I think they were unlucky against UNC. We'll talk about that in a little bit and what it did to my heart over the weekend. But I think you're right. These five teams have got massive games this weekend. We start at 10 with Oklahoma State, pushing into the top 10 now. Then Notre Dame at 9. Oklahoma moved up to 8 from 9 on their week off, which is only good news for them in the playoff rankings. Yeah. Then we've got Michigan State at 7 and Michigan at 6 after Michigan State beat Michigan.
Yeah, it's a weird... That's the one thing in... There's two things that I really disagree with in these rankings. One of them is that Michigan are above Michigan State after Michigan State beat them. Yes, Michigan State lost to Purdue this week, but I mean, I can't understand why Michigan have gone ahead of them. Like, they're the same record, so you go on strength of schedule, which is one of the factors that they say that they take into account in the college playoffs. Well, clearly you don't, because you've put Michigan above Michigan State and Michigan State beat you 2 weeks, beat them 2 weeks ago. So who did Michigan play this weekend? Indiana beat them relatively. Yeah, they beat them comfortably. They only let in one touchdown. But even so, like, if you're going to take the strength of schedule into account, take it into account. I think Michigan State can feel hard done by there. Deserve a drop. There's no doubt about it. Deserve a drop because from three. You can't complain about that because they lost and they lost to Purdue and it was a great game, but at the end of the day they lost that game. But I just don't understand why Michigan have gone ahead of them. I can't understand it and I won't understand it.
Ash refuses to understand why Michigan are ranked ahead of Michigan State.
I can't. It's crazy. It makes me angry. So we should move on to the top five. I think.
Well, you said you've got two things you disagree with, Ash. One of them being Michigan, Michigan State. What's the other one? Have we already covered it?
No, we'll get into that in a minute. I think I'm getting ahead. I got so angry, I completely glossed over Oklahoma and Notre Dame and Oklahoma State. I think Notre Dame and Oklahoma State have had great years, and this is a warranted place for them. Notre Dame, we mentioned it earlier in the year, that they didn't look great. They've rectified that. They have improved the way they've been playing the last few weeks, and I think a top 10 berth is warranted. And I think this is thereabouts where we will see them the end of the year and where they should really be the end of the year with the way their whole season has gone. Mm-hmm. I'm glad to see Oklahoma still at eight because they haven't looked great really all year. And yes, you can't take away the fact they're undefeated, and there'll always be people that go top. Well, it's one of the top conferences in the country and they're undefeated. Why are they so low down? They just haven't looked that good, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. And this weekend, I hope Baylor do them over. I really do. And I think they can do. And I think if they do, people shouldn't be that surprised. But yeah. So my other point is in regards to the top five. And at number five,
you are doing the top five. Go for it.
Yeah, I'm doing the top five. Yeah. At number five is Cincinnati. At four, Ohio State. At three, Oregon. Bama have stayed at number two. And of course, Georgia at number one. No one can dispute Georgia at number one. If anyone tries to, they are an idiot. I will fight to the death with that. They are the best team in the country, without a doubt. I worry for anybody that goes up against them. I really do. We've mentioned about Ohio State and CJ Stroud going up against that defense. I'd still be worried. There's no one that you can put in front of that defense that I would go, yeah, they're going to do him over. I think this defense is just... they're getting there to be one of the best defensive units we've ever seen, in my opinion, anyway, in my personal opinion.
Well, the stats don't lie, Ash. They just don't give up touchdowns.
And you don't even have to look at the stats. You go and look at half a game of highlights and you go, I'd die if I was in front of you lot. Bama at two, it's because it's Bama still. But barring that one dropped game, they've been good all year. Bryce Young has been on his game for the majority of the year, which is why he's one of the Heisman favorites. But two still, I don't know. It still grinds me. The issue I have is that Cincinnati are at five, and those three teams are above them, regardless of who they are. Bama, Oregon, and Ohio State. Cincinnati should still be above them. They haven't looked great the last couple of weeks, but they're still undefeated. They're still playing relatively competitive teams. And they're still winning. And I can't get my head. It's the same as last year. They were them and Texas A&M last year were hard done. But they lost towards the end of the year, which obviously took them out. But up until that point, I think they were unjustly missing out on the playoffs along with Texas A&M. I think this year it's even worse, in my opinion. And I don't want to cover it too much because we've gone over it in details when we've been talking about the AP rankings. They finally got to two. The playoff rankings come out and they're obviously back down to six and now five. So they are moving up. But the only way we're going to see Cincinnati into the playoffs now is if one of those four teams above them lose, which obviously I'm praying that it will not happen this weekend with Purdue against Ohio State. But my pessimistic cap on, I'm dreading that game. I don't know who Oregon have got this weekend. I'm just quickly having a look because I'm intrigued to see if there's any games really that they can drop now. They've only got two games left. So they play Utah this weekend, which could be a very interesting game. A very interesting game.
Cam Rising is playing lights out right now. That is no joke of a football
Sorry,
team.
They've got Washington State this weekend. Then they've got Utah the following weekend. But even so, that Utah game could be a real banana skin. Yeah, Cam Rising's playing well. That Utah defense is one of the best in the country. And then they finish Oregon State, which is a rivalry game, and that can go anyway. So
Civil War, baby.
I would love to see Cincinnati in there. I really would love to see him in the top four come the end of the year. But if it's as long as it's not at the expense of Ohio, let Ohio win out, Oregon lose, Cincinnati get in four, jobs are good, and let's wrap it up.
Everyone's happy there. Okay, Oklahoma beat Baylor this weekend, Ash. Cincinnati win again. Do Oklahoma jump Baylor because they're Oklahoma? Cincinnati because they're Oklahoma.
I don't think they can justify that big of a jump. I don't think they can justify a three place jump and above someone else, even if they beat Baylor. I think what we'll probably see if Oklahoma win this weekend, regardless of what happens to Michigan State, Michigan, we'll probably see them at six and Cincinnati stay at five if everyone above wins. If all top eight wins, which I don't think we've seen much this year, to be honest with you, but if all top eight teams wins, I see Oklahoma jumping above both Michigan teams, but not above Cincinnati.
Okay, that's fair. I was just playing devil's advocate with Cincinnati.
No, fair enough.
That's going to be a good game. Let's we're going to try and keep this timing tight, Ash, this week. We're trying to be more professional. We've got two games that we want to cover from week 10. That's Wake Forest at UNC and Michigan State at Purdue. Do you want to do them first, and then we'll get to our Week 11 look ahead quick?
Yeah, I think the week look ahead is these are the games to focus on. So let's quickly review the two games that we've picked out, and we've got to start at Wake Forest and UNC because 55 Wake Forest, 58 UNC. You just look at that scoreline, and you know this is going to be an absolutely fantastic and entertaining game to watch, unless you're Stocks. So, Stocks, do you want to? Why is it not a great game for you, despite the scoreline?
So, when's the Thursday night mid American action? I had a lucky 15 lose by 1 point. I had Central. I think it was who was it? Somebody didn't cover by a point. And that cost me a lucky 15. So that was annoying. And then Wake Forest gave up 24 fourth quarter points to miss the 2.5 point cover to lose by 3. So that was also the fourth of my fourth teams in a lucky 15 to not come in. So not only did Wake Forest lose by giving up 24, one of those was a 60-yard run in the fourth quarter. At Wake Forest had beat up on defense. Their whole season has been built on we'll get ahead and then we'll stay ahead regardless of how many you can score. And UNC's quality just came out at the end of that fourth quarter. Wake were, they just could not keep up with UNC's ground game, and they pounded them in that fourth quarter. And
yeah, their ground game, I was about to say, if you hadn't mentioned it, yeah, their ground game is what won them this game. They ran over Wake Forest time and time again. What is it? I think they finished with over 320, 330 rushing yards, something like that, and six touchdowns. Chandler was just on fire, 213 yards, four touchdowns, and then obviously Sam Howell, we know he can do it with his feet. But like you say, the Wake Forest defense was beat up. Sam Hartman kept it. Well, I say he kept it. He got them to a great lead, and he had a great game. But he made a few little mental errors that resulted in some crucial interceptions, despite throwing five touchdowns and nearly 400 yards. But it comes down to the defense at the end of the day. As you say, that fourth quarter capitulation, giving up 24 points after having such a good defense up until this point, you can see that they are hurt, that they were hurt, and they were missing key players.
Yeah, and this goes against them in the ranking as well. You just can't give up 24 fourth quarter points and still hold your position in the ranking. Obviously, we've seen them drop because of the loss, but that hurts more than the loss does itself. The loss and the fact they gave up 24 in the fourth.
I mean, you look above them, and there's only three teams there that are undefeated, but they have lost one game and dropped they're now 12th again. They're out of the top 10, and there's teams that are in the top 10 with a one-loss victory, a one-loss record. But as you say, the way they lost that game was so... They just capitulated so bad in the fourth quarter that the drop is unfortunately warranted.
Yeah, and then the next game is Michigan State at Purdue. Purdue won 40-29, and the Boilermakers, they didn't just win this. Kenneth Walker was good again for Michigan State, but Purdue, they were the better team start to finish and deserved the win over Michigan State.
Yeah, Aiden O'Connell, Purdue quarterback, I think he threw over 500 yards and he just he had his way with the Michigan State defense, which again, Michigan State defense have been great this year, and then they just sort of just again fell apart. Now, it wasn't as bad as Wake Forest. This was a back and forth game throughout the whole game. I think Purdue took the lead in the second quarter, and I think they held it for the whole time. Aiden O'Connell had his way with the secondary. David Bell, Purdue wide receiver, who we mentioned before, is slowly but surely ticking his way back up as to one of the top wide receivers that we've seen a couple of years ago. He had over 200 yards and a touchdown on the day. He was lights out. And as you say, Kenneth Walker is still doing what he does. But as we said when we were talking about the Heisman, was it last week? I think the week before. It was last week, wasn't
it?
If Michigan State don't win and Walker still plays well, does that diminish what Walker's doing? And I think, yes, it probably will do now. This lad still had over 130 yards and scored a touchdown and was running over people like they weren't there. But people are only going to remember that Michigan State lost to Purdue. And I don't think the way they lost was not great either. Again, it's another team that you expect to dominate on defense that really didn't. And Purdue had their way with Michigan State, and Michigan State were trying to claw their way back. And if you put the ball in Peyton Thorne's hands, he's a good quarterback, but he's not a great quarterback, and he won't be able to, unfortunately, guide you to a victory. And when you're losing, you can't always rely on your running back. You've got to put the ball in the air to score those quick points. So...
They were relying on their second wide receiver to step up and be the one, Mr. Reed. Naylor's out, isn't he? So
he is. Yeah, that's a massive loss for Michigan State now as well. I don't know. I've not actually looked at how long he's out for. If it was just a game, but or if he's out indefinitely, I'm not sure what his injury is. I'm just having a look now. But big loss because he was Peyton Thorne's main guy, and.
Yeah,
they've come out and said that they're still confident without him, but it doesn't say when he's back. I can't find when he's back, but if he's not there, as I say, people can focus on putting the pressure on Thorne, and people can focus on the run game.
That's it.
Walker still puts up 130 yards, but if Naylor's there, maybe he's putting up 200 or close to 200, and he's given that bit more freedom. But you can plan for that run game when you know how good it is and the key weapon's not there and the quarterback is not relying too much on that wide receiver. You can plan for the run game then.
Yeah, Bob on. Right, Ash, we got four games, week 11, we think you should be keeping an eye on. The first is Texas A&M at Ole Miss, as we've mentioned. Then, as we've mentioned, Oklahoma at Baylor. Nevada at San Diego State, that is a big one.
Yeah,
in the group of five. And then UCF at SMU, another group of five game, which has got big time. But that could be a cracker.
Yeah, exactly. I wanted to make sure that we put a little bit of focus on group of five in these look aheads because they're such big games. Nevada, San Diego, they're both in the Mountain West. They're both in the Mountain West, and they're 1-2. So one of these two teams are going to the Mountain West title. And at the minute, San Diego are number one. But if Nevada win to get this victory, they've got an equal record, but obviously Nevada goes top with that better conference record. So massive game. And of course, people by now should know my love affair for Carson Strong. And as we get into the NFL draft build up, you'll really get to know my love affair for Carson Strong. So I hope Nevada win this game. But it's going to be a cracker. It really is going to be a fantastic game.
I hope Nevada win this, and I hope Carson Strong picks out Charlie Turner for more than two passes and 60 yards. The guy needs to find the end zone more than once for me.
That's true as well. Yeah. And then, but of course, go on, sorry.
I was just going to say, he's someone to watch out for in the draft as well, Charlie Turner, one of the best tight ends in this class. And
There's a few guys in Nevada. Obviously, Romeo Doomes is already one of the top wide receivers. Then you've got Carson Strong, who in an underwhelming draft class, in my opinion, could still really state a claim for the QB1. And I hung my hat on that in the preseason, and I'm going to continue to do so. But yeah, there's some big names on both sides of the ball, but it should be a very entertaining game. And then, of course, in the AAC, you've got UCF versus SMU. Everyone knows UCF. They've been one of the top non-Power 5 teams for a long time now. Not quite where they were, where they got Cincinnati and Houston in that division. But these two teams are fighting for the next best thing. They're currently 3-4 with UCF at number 3. But, of course, they'll be looking to see if Houston or Cincinnati drop ball. At the minute, Houston are number 1. Houston are number 1 in the AAC because they played more conference games and they're undefeated in the conference, whereas obviously Cincinnati have played more out-of-conference games. But those two, as it stands, will be going to the AAC title game. And of course, UCF, SMU, this is a big game because one of these two could potentially leapfrog either of those if things fall apart. So, and it's obviously SMU who we know how much you like Mordecai. So
yeah, and he's still balling out regardless of the two losses.
Yeah, he really is.
Yeah, I need him to keep doing the showdown that lost the weekend. We won't dive into the showdown.
No, not this week. We'll cover it next week.
Rich beat me in a close one, and
yeah.
I played the wrong Turner Mordecai. Didn't get the job done.
It wasn't a great week for either of us, to be honest with you.
I haven't looked at the standings. I don't want to, in case I'm no longer in the playoffs.
I'm out.
Okay, great. That's not great for Team College. Yeah. Although we do have two top, the guys at the top two, Jordan and Jack, are representing.
We do.
Of Texas A&M and Ole Miss, Oklahoma, Baylor, Ash, anything else we need to say about those games before we head out?
I think the games speak for themselves. Texas and Ole Miss more so. 11 and 15 in the rankings. Two top SEC teams who I'm not sure where. Let's have a quick look before we go. Let's have a quick look at where they are in their respective conference divisions within the SEC. So Texas are number 2, a game behind Bama. And Ole Miss a further game behind Texas A&M. So still a lot to play for. Bama slip up in the West, and obviously it's all to play for that title game. And it's Ole Miss versus Texas A&M. It's going to be a fantastic, entertaining game. Texas defense is that good, and obviously Matt Corral was up to a point been lights out. So that's going to be an interesting battle. And of course, Oklahoma undefeated, but have not looked fantastic. And Baylor have had some big victories this year. And again, another team with a top tier defense. Are they going to be able to put the pressure on Caleb Williams and get that upset? We have to call it an upset because they're Oklahoma undefeated. They're the top team. They're one of the top teams in the Big 12. So, but yeah. I, as I said earlier, I think Baylor can do it, and I hope they do it. I really do.
As long as it's a shootout and Caleb Williams does great, then I'm all for Baylor beating Oklahoma. I don't mind at this point. I just hope that the Oklahoma-Baylor game is on ESPN, BT Sport ESPN, because it's Oklahoma at Baylor, which means that glorious two-tone green pitch will be on full display. It'll be a great game anyway. We've got some absolutely belting football to look forward to. It's going to be a great weekend, Ash.
It really is, yeah. Really looking forward to it. It's going to be great. And we're getting into the business end of the year now, so this is where the real fun begins.
Absolutely. Well, Rush Nation, this has been Ash and I on a Wednesday evening. It's not Monday. Don't worry. This isn't out late. This is as live as it gets. If we've missed anything, if you want anything added to the show, please do let us know at 5R College. If you want to talk about anything college-related, again, at 5R College. If you want to write about college, if you want to tweet about college for us, let us know. We're open to taking on writers, content creators. Anybody wants to just come and chat ball, we are hugely available for that. Ash, my man, this has been an absolute blast once again. The new place of Wednesday seems to suit us well. I'm enjoying it, man. Thanks very much.
No, it's been fun as always, and I'm already looking forward to next week.
That's it. And we've got more football to talk about, so let's get rid of it. Rush Nation, head over to 5yardrush.co.uk. Check out the boys' articles. They are smashing it right now. It's a big-time coverage of college football that we've got for you. This is Wednesday. That's Ash. I'm Stocks. Saturdays are for Rushing too.
HIV epidemic is not over. HIV is still here.
The face of HIV is so diverse.
The biggest thing to reduce HIV stigma is just to talk about it. Testing and PrEP and HIV treatment and how effective it is today.
Undetectable equals untransmittable. Whether you're positive or negative, there's not a wrong door. Whether it's testing or whether it's treatment, do it for you, Montgomery County.
Learn more about HIV testing, treatment, and prevention at doitforyoumc.org.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.